What makes a monster? The people we will be discussing in this podcast have committed horrendous atrocities to mankind. We've thoroughly researched the criminally insane to the psychopathically wicked.
Every serial killer has similar traits that they all share and other traits that are completely unique to them. We have interviewed a few professionals regarding serial killers in order to further deepen our understanding of the topic.
Everyday people have become serial killers for many different reasons. Certain childhood traits have led psychologists to create the McDonald Triad, which has three traits that almost every single serial killer has shown in their young and adolescent life. These traits include animal cruelty. Killers typically find the tendency to do horrific and often brutal things to small animals.
The second piece of the McDonald Triad is fire setting. Serial killers typically find relief in watching something be destroyed and consumed in flames. No mind, no motive, just flaming destruction.
The third and final piece of the triad is unintentional bedwetting during sleep. The idea is if bedwetting is present after the age of 5, frustration starts building, and that frustration is taken out in some other way, usually the other two pieces of the McDonald triad. However, this piece of the triad, many professional psychologists consider to be a myth or nonsensical. This may be true, but it has been present in a number of serial killers over the years.
Now that we've established a general base of serial killer traits, we can move on to the next piece of our discussion, the monsters themselves. Our first killer, Peter Curtin, was a German serial killer. He brutally murdered at least 9 people before surrendering to the police in 1931. He is known as the Dusseldorf Vampire. Peter grew up with a rough childhood. Both of his parents were alcoholics, which had been abusive to him and his 10 other siblings. It was said whenever Peter's father would drink, he would order Peter and the rest of his family into the same room while he committed intercourse with his wife while Peter and the other children watched. Soon after, Peter and his other siblings were left with only their mother, as his father had been jailed for the last year and a half. During this time, his mother had declared a separation order against Peter's father and had remarried. During this time, we start to see the McDonald Triad appear in Peter.
It first started when he tried to drown one of his playmates. Later, he befriended a local dog catcher, in which he would torture and kill the animals he caught for the man. Although it was said Peter was good at schoolwork, it soon became apparent that his father's abuse would soon lead Peter to staying at school instead of going home. He would often run away to escape the horrid things his father had done. While in the midst of escaping his father, he would regularly kill and torture animals as a hobby. Keep in mind, this was all happening when Peter was an adolescent and during the age of 9. He committed his first murder by pushing a friend off a log raft when he knew he could not swim. While he killed this friend of his, another person actually tried to save him, but he was only found to be held underwater by Peter, attempting to prevent him from saving the drowning friend.
As Peter grew up, his life worsened. He started to get his first convictions, which began in 1900 when he was arrested for fraud. During his periods of release between prison times, Peter was responsible for several sexual assaults and murders. One of his first documented murder victims was 10-year-old Christine Klein. Christine was sexually assaulted and stabbed to death. Much later, his crime escalation peaked by killing a 9-year-old girl named Rosa. She was stabbed 13 times, and after her death, Peter laid her remains under a hedge and then set her body on fire, destroying the remains. This is another connection to the McDonald Triad.
Later, in 1931, Peter was finally captured and sent to court. The jury only took 90 minutes to file Peter as guilty. He received 9 death sentences. Peter was executed by guillotine in Germany on July 2nd, 1931.
Our second serial killer we will be talking about is none other than the notorious Ted Bundy.
November 8th, 1974, Salt Lake City, Utah. 18-year-old Carol Durant was going to a shopping mall to check out some books when a handsome, well-dressed man approached her.
Excuse me, ma'am. Did you park near Sears?
I did. Why?
I think someone tried to break into your car.
Oh my god, are they still there?
No, but they left quite a bit of damage. You need to come with me and take a look.
Okay, yes. Thank you.
This stranger would bring Carol back to his car. The man had an authoritative tone, as if he was an employee or professional, so she didn't question him at the time. The two of them began walking outside in the rain. Carol asked the stranger for his ID, assuming he was a security guard. The mysterious stranger simply laughed and kept walking.
When they got to the car, Carol noticed that nothing was stolen. The man asked her to come with him to the station. The woman agreed. After entering the man's car, the woman smelled alcohol in his breath. She felt uneasy. The man yelled at her and to put her seatbelt on. She refused and tried to jump out of the car. He started the car and began driving, and Carol realized that he was driving away from the police station and screamed. They came to a screeching halt and he tried to handcuff her. Carol continuously squirmed around and he accidentally cuffed the same hand twice.
She fell out of the car and the man pulled out a gun. As Carol was lying on the ground, he grabbed a crowbar and pinned her against the side of the vehicle. The man had a horrifying expression of pleasure on his face. The woman managed to break free and sprint down the road. Luckily, she found an old couple who brought her to a police station. They investigated the incident but found no man and no car.
This was the work of serial killer Ted Bundy. Carol DeRanche was one of the few victims of his that managed to get away relatively unscathed. But this would not be the case for his other 30-plus people that Ted Bundy killed in cold blood.
Ted Bundy was born November 24th, 1946, in Burlington, Vermont. Bundy had a long portfolio in the criminal world. He was a serial killer, a kidnapper, a rapist, a burglar, and possibly the most disturbingly of all, a necrophile, or a person who feels sexual attraction towards corpses.
Ted Bundy was not raised by two biological parents. His mother Louise couldn't handle the responsibility of parenthood, so Bundy was raised by his grandparents. He was convinced that his grandparents were his parents, and his actual mother was his sister. His grandfather was his main role model, and this would play a huge role in Ted's future.
Ted's grandfather, Samuel Cowell, was racist, aggressive, and abusive. He wasn't particularly abusive to Ted, but he would often beat animals and people to display acts of power around Ted. He was Ted's idol, showing him the joy of hurting others.
Bundy's adolescent life was full of shoplifting and burglary. He quickly became interested in spying on women and watching them change. And by the age of 15, Bundy committed his first murder. There was a young 8-year-old girl, Anne Marie Burr, who lived in Ted's neighborhood. On August 1st, 1961, she was found missing after a neighbor said she saw someone looking through their window earlier that week. She was never found and is believed to be Bundy's first victim.
Bundy eventually found out his mother wasn't who she said she was. The person he believed to be his sister was his real, biological mother. This, paired along with Ted's recent breakup with his 5-year girlfriend, began his realization that all women were deceivers and liars. Because of this, he would learn to take his aggression into his victims.
Now, while Bundy didn't follow the triad, he had some other very notable traits that the majority of serial killers seem to have. He was a fantastic charmer. He could convince women to get in his car through a variety of different means. He was so charming, in fact, that when he was finally arrested, no one could believe he did the things the media claimed he did. Almost everyone defended him.
This charming personality, along with his good looks, made him a very dangerous man. He got a thrill out of lying, playing with people like some sort of game. He'd rape and murder as many people as he could with no real reason why. Ted Bundy has gone down in history as one of the most infamous and smooth-talking killers of all time. We interviewed Minnetonka High School's favorite psychology teacher, Mr. Moran, to ask him a few questions about common traits in serial killers and psychopaths.
Okay, so the first question you're asking me, is there any difference between a normal person's brain and that of a serial killer's brain? Well, if you do look at brain scans, you do look that there is an issue of impulse control. And if you remember from psychology, impulse control usually has to do with the frontal lobe, and amongst many other things. And so when you compare a serial killer's brain to that of a normal brain, you do see that impulse control area in the frontal region, the frontal lobe, is activated much more. So it seems to me to indicate that they have less objectivity and ability to look at a situation and act pragmatically, when you and I would look at something and say, well, that's unfathomable. I mean, I would never do something like that. A serial killer doesn't even have that dialogue going on, that internal dialogue that says, well, I would never do that. The second thing you're asking is nature versus nurture. How does that play into? Well, nature versus nurture is that gigantic debate or question that we talk about with any area of development. And purposely, when you talk about with serial killing, I mean, I think you could probably look at it from both sides and discuss it from a nature. Is a person born that way? Do they have a propensity to act in such a way that would lead them to a behavior that would be typically identified as irrational or maybe a serial killer type behavior? Or nurture, are they growing up in such a hostile environment or one that reinforces that type of behavior that would lead to harming other people? I mean, what type of environment would a child be raised in where they would set fires or they would attack and pick on vulnerable animals or in many cases vulnerable people? Is that something where they grow up in that environment where that has been somehow modeled, or they grow up in such an environment where that has not been punished? So again, this kind of linking back to a nature versus nurture issue. The personality types, I think that kind of opens up a lot of issues of narcissism and antisocial personality issues like that. And that all, again, comes back to whether or not a person has an underdeveloped or overdeveloped conscience, whether they feel that what they're doing in violation of another person's safety or privacy, if that even registers with them as being wrong. So when you look at an antisocial or / anti-personality disorder, usually you're talking about a person with a low regard for the safety or the protection of others and a high regard for their own personal stimulation and aggrandizement. In a perverse sense, I think that if you read anything about serial killers, you realize that they get somewhat of a charge from what they're doing. Personality types, I think you could probably easily put them into certain categories of personalities that lend towards this type of behavior. And then the last thing you're asking me, do you feel serial killers believe what they are doing is justified, or they know that they are doing evil? It kind of ties up a lot of what I've been kind of addressing here, because I think that outside of a courtroom situation where they're trying to establish the fact, or they perhaps establish a fact that they did not know what they were doing, I think there might be some truth to the fact that in their own perverse mindset, that they do not have a developed conscience, they do not have control, they lack control issues, and therefore they don't feel badly about it. But I don't know if you can go as far as to say that that they feel that they are doing justified for what they're doing, meaning that they feel okay with it.
Today, we've explored several aspects of serial killers, along with the monsters themselves.
Ted Bundy and Peter Curtin were two particularly infamous human beings killing and targeting unsuspecting people, murdering for no real reason.
Serial killers can be a person in your everyday life, a nice, charming coworker, a quiet neighbor, or even a close family member, and you'd never know. There could even be one growing inside of you.
We got our information from many websites. In the description below.